Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigga. Glad to have you with us today. This is a pledge show, which means that we give you plenty of opportunities to help support the work we're doing here, but we have a bit less time to talk, so I want to get right to the conversation of the day with just a couple of notes. I'm told we still have a few seats left for our October 15th production of the show. We're going to do it in front of a live audience here at Georgia Public Broadcasting Studios on 14th Street in Midtown, Monday evening, October 15th. If you'd like to be in the audience, go to gpb.org/community and sign up for a free ticket. And then on October 30th, we'll be down in Savannah at the Jewish Education Center. The Coastal League of Women Voters is our host down there. Again, gpb.org/community. And I'm told that seats for both of those events are going very, very quickly. But we'd sure love to see you, whether it's in Midtown Atlanta or in, in Savannah. Watch us right now on Facebook Live. Tweet us at PoliticsGPB. Jim Galloway, of course. It's Monday. You're with us, lead political writer, as you are, for the AJC.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you here.
Good to be here.
Right across the studio table from you, Heath Garrett, Republican political consultant. Got a couple of candidates in the election cycle coming up.
I do. It's great to be here on a Monday.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit about one of your most important friends and clients, Senator Johnny Isaacson. We'll get to that when we talk about Brett Kavanaugh in a few minutes. Jordan Fuchs joins us for the first time. She is your vice president of Landmark Communications, a polling firm and a consulting firm. Your boss, Mark Rountree, has been on the show a number of times, so it's great to welcome you for your first appearance.
Thank you for having me.
And next to you, Michael C. Owens. He is the Democratic Party chair out in Cobb County. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how are you doing today, sir?
Really well. All right, let's get right to it. Jordan, you have come in with a brand new poll, first to the governor's race, and then the Brett Kavanaugh approval rating. Let's talk about what your... Tell us how many people you surveyed and the margin of error, and then tell us what your poll shows.
So we surveyed about 964 likely voters. We got responses from. The margin of error on this poll is 3.2. But what is interesting about this poll is that this is the first one that shows Kemp leading by 2 points. He is leading with a margin of 48 to 46 with very little undecided. And the Libertarian is getting about 2 points. And the obvious things about this poll, Kemp is winning men by a margin of 56 to 41, yet Stacey is leading women by 51 to 43.
So Jim, in the first place, we should point out that, yes, we've seen polls that show this is a horse race already. This one does, too. It is within the margin of error, but right. It is the first time we've seen numbers that show Kemp just a touch ahead of Abrams.
Just a touch, and it kind of... And I'm sure we'll get into the details next. It's a little bit... this time 4 years ago, I think it was Mark Rountree told me it was October 9th before we had the first poll that showed Nathan Deal ahead of Jason Carter. And so this is happening a little bit earlier. And Ms. Fuchs and Rountree suspect is that the Kavanaugh thing has kind of speeded up, has acted as an accelerator.
It definitely has. It has solidified both bases. So the Democrats have kind of rallied behind their candidates because of the Kavanaugh situation, and then Republicans are having a similar response. So we are seeing both parties rallying behind.
Michael, 3.4% undecided in this poll. That's a tiny number with 5 weeks ago till election day.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I am encouraged by this poll, by a large shot. Being within a statistical error margin at this point, and the words that stick out to me very loudly are likely voters. And what I know is that, there's tons of voters across the state that are not likely voters that are going to come out and vote for Stacey Abrams. And I think that's going to be a huge difference maker.
I think these numbers are really fascinating. I do think that it looks like we're hearing this anecdotally from our clients, not only in Georgia but around the country. The Kavanaugh hearing has galvanized the base for the right and for conservatives and Republicans everywhere in the country, from Maryland to New York to Michigan to even to Georgia. And so this is the first data I've seen that kind of verifies what we're seeing anecdotally on the ground in all of these races. I also think a couple of other things. It shows a trend line where you definitely had Brian Kemp down by 7. In some polls as much as 9 the day after the runoff. And now the trend has been slowly upward tick now to where he's actually in the lead for the first time. But the Democrats, can take a lot out of this poll and go, gosh, we're at 46 this late. Normally a Democrat's hanging around more like 44 at this point. And so Republicans cannot rest on their laurels here. And what this says is if the election were held today, there would be a runoff. And yeah. We've been through that in 2008
right.
here.
So if I could jump in with two questions here. Number one, when this poll was entirely conducted after the Kavanaugh hearing, correct?
Correct. It took place last night.
All right. And Bill, one thing I think is fascinating, and it kind of lines up with those Democratic numbers we were talking about this time last week. If you looked at every age category, the only age category here in this poll that Brian Kemp wins is the 65 and older crowd.
He wins 56% of the voters 65 and older, but he loses by a wide margin, 55%, 18 to 30, 55%, 31 to 45, and 50%, 46 to 64.
So even if November 6th doesn't give Stacey Abrams good news, there is a lot of reasons for a Democrat to be optimistic here.
Jordan, one of the key questions we always ask in a poll, statewide poll of Georgia voters, is how do you weigh the black vote in this? What do you weigh African-American voters, their participation in any race, and how you choose to weigh that participation has a big impact on the numbers.
So I believe this one is at 30%, and that's just based off of historical.
31.7, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you for correcting me. So, but yes, and so it's based off of historical.
Which would be a historic high. 31.7 would exceed 2008 Obama numbers.
Well, this would be a historic moment for African Americans, and in particular female voters. So, with Stacey Abrams on the top of the ticket, this is really something that we'll see a little bit of an uptick in turnout. So. I think that's why there is a larger projection there.
Michael?
I think we also, we go one step down to lieutenant governor race, and we have Sarah Riggs Amico there. So you have someone who is I think, now more comfortable saying she's a former Republican and a white mom that's an entrepreneur that's providing jobs for Georgians across the metro area. So that to me is a very powerful 1-2 combination punch between Sarah Riggs Amico and Stacey Abrams.
All right. Well, I don't want to get too far from the governor's race, but as long as you're talking the lieutenant governor's race, you've got those numbers too, Jordan. You show Jeff Duncan, the Republican, at 48%. Sarah Riggs Amico at 46% rounded up. Once again, margin of error stuff.
Is a 3.2. So in this particular race, you're seeing undecideds at 6%. And the numbers aren't very dissimilar from Kemp at this point. So, there's this theme that we will rise and fall with the ticket.
All right. We've got to get to a pledge break. There are a lot more numbers that we want to look at during this show today, including the numbers on Brett Kavanaugh's approval rating in Georgia. We will do that in a few minutes. But right now, Bradley George and Drew Dawson are standing by to help you understand how you can support all that we do here at GPB Radio.
Or go to gpb.org. We are now in the final days of this fall fund drive, but don't wait till the last day or the last moment to make your contribution. Do it now during Political Rewind and show your support for Political Rewind and everything you listen to on GPB with that contribution at 800-222-4788 or gpb.org.
You know, as the midterm election season heats up, Political Rewind has the coverage you need to be informed. And GPB is bringing you the program on more platforms than ever before. You can find the show on GPB Radio and streaming on Facebook Live 4 days a week at 2 p.m., as well as on Sundays at 9 a.m. on GPB Television. please help us continue to be here for you during this election season and beyond with your show of support at gpb.org, clicking the donate button at the top of the page, or calling 800-222-4788.
Again, that's 800-222-4788 or gpb.org. When you do, you will enter a drawing for a vacation at Callaway Resort and Gardens, including two nights of accommodation, admission to the gardens, and you'll also get tickets to their holiday light show, Fantasy and Lights, which runs November 16th through January 5th. The drawing is coming up quick, less than 2 hours from now at 4 o'clock, so don't put off making that contribution any longer. Our thanks to Callaway Resort and Gardens for offering this opportunity. You're not required to make a contribution to enter the drawing, but because GPB is listener-supported, we hope you will at 800-222-4788 or gpb.org.
When it matters, GPB is here for you, and GPB is here because of you, because people listening right now, just like you are, support the service. You hear the news that matters to you. Your gift now ensures that you and everyone in our community will have access to diverse voices and points of view. Ensure that you have the information you need and the news that matters. Make your gift to GPB right now. Join us with a contribution of $5, $10, $20 a month or more. It all adds up to a public media service that is here for you day after day. Don't just think about it. Do it. Become a GPB sustainer with a monthly contribution or a single one-time gift. Very easy to do. Doesn't take but a couple minutes. Our website is gpb.org, or you can call 800-222-4788, and thanks for your support.
The amount you give is up to you. We have different thank you levels depending on the amount you give. $10 a month as a GPB sustainer gets you two Political Rewind solo cups. If you've watched the show on Facebook Live, you'll see Bill and his guests enjoying water from solo cups. They were the real plastic thing, but then they got all fancy and they got ceramic solo cups with the political.
Drew Dawson, Bradley George, thanks for telling our listeners how they can become a part of the Political Rewind and the whole GPB radio family. I personally am going to drink a toast with my Political Rewind red ceramic solo cup to all of you out there who have already pledged, and to hope the rest of you will as well. Thanks so much for your support.
If there's any question, it's vodka.
All right, let's finish up on the gubernatorial poll that we got from Landmark Communications, which we are very grateful that Jordan Few shared with us today. Michael, 31%+ African-American turnout is what gets Stacey Abrams within the margin of error rate, according to this poll, to Brian Kemp. How realistic is it that you're going to get African-Americans mobilized in those numbers?
Yeah, I know I heard Heath earlier say, you know, that would be historic numbers. I mean, that's, we're talking Obama 2008 numbers. And that by no means is a heavy lift. I mean, we know that. But we also know the work that that's been done throughout the state and the work that Stacey Abrams herself has done. So, you know, it's far outside the metro area either. I mean, we look in areas like DeKalb County, Fulton County, where we know we just have to have some really high numbers. But Stacey Abrams, I think at this point, has been to, you know, 155 or 156 out of 159 counties. So, I mean, it's truly leave no stone unturned. And I do think now it's a possibility where people truly believe this is possible, right? And I think that, to go back to talk about the Obama numbers 2008, you know, there's something that can happen when we take the ability that you can believe that this can actually happen, that we believe that we can have Stacey Abrams. And, you know, the fight that I have a lot of times is, you know, from my standpoint, it's not just that Stacey Abrams is a female or a black female. It's important as well. But a lot of people are identifying with it. They're identifying with the message. And I think when you couple, you know, this blue wave that we continue to talk about with the reality that Stacey Abrams has spent a long time cultivating these relationships in the black and brown communities, that we could definitely see these numbers.
Jordan, I want to share with you an observation from one of our Facebook Live viewers. Laura Adams says less than 20% of the people in the poll we've tweeted the poll out already, were under age 45, grossly underestimating the voting population. And then she says, we're on fire for change. I get that sentiment, and we have seen that in your polling, younger voters seem to be moving to Abrams. But what is the reality of whether people underage, you know, how we can anticipate the
kind of
turnout?
Well, the reality is that this is not a presidential election, And that's when young people really do turn out. They traditionally don't turn out for these types of races. So that's why you're seeing those particular numbers.
Okay. Heath, you get to wrap this part of the conversation up.
I think there are two things as we talk to Republican candidates in Georgia and around the state. There are some trend lines here. First of all, with the African-American vote, they have the opportunity to vote for a historic figure in Stacey Abrams, who would be the first African-American female governor anywhere. And they also have a motivation to vote against Donald Trump and some of the antics that Republicans are at least labeled with around the country at times. And I think that's a double motivator that we as Republicans have to pay attention to, and it's one of the gaps that I think Republicans are going to have to close in the next 2 to 3 election cycles to remain relevant, not only here. And I also think with these younger voters, it's going to be interesting. Every cycle we hear younger voters saying they're motivated, yet the data doesn't show that. Republicans would be wrong to say it's not going to happen this time. And so I think that we've got to be prepared and be doing things to go after those voters.
Jim, I want to give you a chance to jump in, but I want to make one comment that I always feel we have to do. People, they say, oh, but this pollster, that pollster, they didn't get the race correctly when the election was finished. This is a snapshot of the moment. This is not and no poll is intended to show the outcome. This shows where we stand today. But
no,
go ahead.
What you're looking for is the movement.
Yes.
And you pay attention to multiple polls, and especially polls conducted by the same outlet, so you can see time after time. One thing I would point out here is that according to the Landmark Communications poll, Stacey Abrams is polling 25.2% of the white vote. That is actually pretty good.
Which is pretty much what she needs.
I'm guessing here, but I think Jason Carter was 23%.
I believe you're correct, but it truly is not enough.
It's not enough, but it's...
Stacey Abrams was banking on the fact that she could pull some Republican women to her camp, and we're simply not seeing those numbers here. If you pull over to the GOP side, Kemp is winning and consolidating the GOP numbers by 91.6%.
Oh, no, but yeah, I don't disagree. That's not my point is that you've got an African-American candidate who is doing just as well among white voters as a white candidate did 4 years ago, a well-known white candidate did 4 years ago.
All right. We're going to have to get to a break in a minute. But before we do, Jordan, why don't you throw out to us, you did look at the approval numbers for Brett Kavanaugh after a tumultuous couple of days last week. And the entire country was focused on the confirmation hearing, the showdown, essentially. What are your polling numbers showing about Georgians responding to Kavanaugh?
So in Georgia in particular, what we're seeing is that a majority of folks are saying that, yes, he should be confirmed. So the margin on that is 49 to 43. And so here in Georgia, folks are saying, yes, go ahead and confirm him.
But again, you've got this age differentiator. You've got 18 to 30-year-olds, 50% say no. The gap isn't as big as it was on Abrams and Kemp. It's 45 say yes. 53%, 31 to 45 say no. 46 to 64, it's just about even. But once again, Heath, over 65, people by a wide margin say yes, confirm Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, no question. There's this age gap here on this issue. I think what's also on the flip side of that, though, Bill, if you look at the gap for females, right, around the country, you would think the gender gap would be greater. But 43% of the females in the poll were saying they're still supportive of Kavanaugh.
Yeah, 47, 43 still within the
margin. Yeah, I sort of buried the lead on that, Jim. Yeah. So that's where we got to go first. It's much closer than we might have anticipated, given how much we're hearing from women being upset about
all this. And if you're looking for the 6th and 7th congressional districts to turn on the votes of white suburban women, that's you need a stronger number than that.
Michael, I think that's a really, really smart observation. This does not appear to be the kind of numbers that can change the outcome of a incumbent a winning victory in the 6th and 7th. There may be other factors, but this is going to play a smaller role than some people may expect if their numbers, you know, prove true.
There are a lot of factors when it comes to that, and this is one, I think, that's more of a generic type thing. We talk about white suburban moms just as a whole, and I think that's where, you know, we're going to look to see how this race is going to break from 6th into 7th.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We'll talk a little bit more about that and move on to a couple of other headlines that are important to us on today's show. But let's go back to Bradley George and Drew Dawson, who want to remind you that we really do need your help to keep programming like Political Rewind going. Welcome back to Political Rewind. Thank you so much, Bradley and Drew, for helping us get to people and suggest to them that we really would like their help so we can keep giving you programming like Political Rewind. And again, those of you who are already sustainers or have contributed, we are grateful to you. All right. Let's talk about Kavanaugh, Jim Galloway, from the perspective of our two United States senators who will actually get a chance to vote on Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation. So right now we have kind of a split. Johnny Isaacson has said, well, let's see what this FBI investigation turns up. David Perdue has said, no, I'm going to vote for Kavanaugh. And what's interesting, let me ask you this. I think I recall that even before Jeff Flake kind of threw things up in the air on Friday, Perdue had put out a statement saying, I'm voting for him. And after the investigation was announced, he was still there. I just wondered, did he get caught a little bit, or is he just that committed?
I think he's there. I think this is a difference in manners more than in outlook, and that Perdue is willing to say Katie barred the door. No matter what they find, he's my guy. I don't think they're going to find anything. Isaacson is a little bit more cautious. And I've said before, and I'll say it again, I think a lot of this is to spare the interns who have to take the phone calls.
Well, Heath, if that's the case, then Isaacson's office must be overwhelmed with calls right now.
I can only imagine. I had a good lunch with the senator today before coming down here. There's no question that people misunderstand this, and somebody said this on 60 Minutes last night. There's really not a political constituency anymore for senators being deliberative, but Johnny Isaacson is a statesman, and he has always been deliberative about these types of issues. And just like a couple of weeks ago, after all the first hearings were over, he was very supportive of Kavanaugh. New information came forward. He said, let's hear what information that is, and now there's going to be an FBI investigation. He's going to be very deliberative. I don't think that he's changed his position of general support for Kavanaugh. However, he believes sincerely in the role of the United States Senate to be the kind of cooling temperament to the U.S. House of Representatives and to take this stuff seriously. And so if there were new information that really came forward that were substantive to the allegations, if nothing new comes forward, he would continue to support.
So two things that seem to me to be very favorable for both members of the Senate, Michael. Number one, there's not a whole lot of downside in this very red state to voting for Brett Kavanaugh. But number two, fortunately for them, neither has a reelection campaign in 2018.
That's true, but I do think there's going to be a difference there, and it shows. And then, you know, back to what Jim was saying, I think from day one, it's been very clear that Senator Perdue is you know, locked completely in with Donald Trump, with the president, and he continues to do so. And very rarely, if not ever, will you see a break in that. So I think that's part of that unwavering support for Kavanaugh even now. But Isaacson, being the statesman that he is, has shown that he's willing to take some time. And you know, he's talking about phone calls. Not only phone calls from the right, I'm sure there's lots of Democrats that's calling his office now and has been calling his office because, you know, when we get people that call the office and they say that, Senator Isaacson hasn't decided yet, boy, that really revs our people up and gives us an opportunity to really call his office and espouse kind of our views on it. So I think you're seeing a clear difference in two candidates, in two senators, although I do think at the end of the day, unless there's something really, you know, explosive out of this, I still think he's going to vote for Kavanaugh.
So, Jordan, neither of them is up for reelection, but David Perdue's up in 2020. And the day after the midterms finish, we're going to see Democratic candidates begin to feel their way toward running against David Perdue. He has been such, as Michael pointed out, a constant supporter of Donald Trump, and on this one he is. It's interesting because he has no way of knowing what the environment might look like in 2020 when he has, if assuming he's going to stand for re-election.
Right. I don't think these two senators, I don't think it's a shock what they're coming out
right.
and saying. what is shocking and what isn't being brought up here is that there were 47 Democrats that vowed, before this even this process started, they vowed to block this nomination regardless of facts. So I think that's what's the interesting story here and what is not being discussed. As well as Schumer.
Let me be careful. We don't have a Democratic member of the U.S. Senate who we might want to have that conversation around, but go ahead.
At the beginning of this, Schumer said he would do whatever it took to make sure that this did not go through.
Yeah.
And so that's really where the focus should be.
Yeah, I don't think, Jim, we would suggest that this is anything but a hardcore partisan fight on both sides, and Democrats have to own that, too.
Right. And I think you're already seeing some acknowledgement that this FBI investigation that was won by Jeff Flake and Lisa Murkowski over the weekend as Friday broke. It's not going to be quite as thorough as Democrats want. But I do think it's taking an interesting turn in focusing not so much on the sexual assault as the alcohol issue. And in that, you know, if you're old enough, Bill, as you are and as I am, you're getting a feeling of the John Tower hearings back in the mid 90s when John Tower, senator from Texas, was nominated to become Secretary of Defense.
Yep.
And he had a very notable drinking problem, and Sam Nunn was the fellow who stuck his neck out and called him on it.
Yeah, Sam Nunn played a huge and very painful role for Sam in that whole process. I'm glad you reminded us of that.
No, I think that is the new narrative, right, that's come out over the weekend, that and trying to go after temperament because Democrats are trying to figure out any way they can to chip away at this. I don't think in the modern era of 2018 that drinking in college is really the narrative that's going to win the day. But I tell you what, SNL, that's what they focused on. And look, I like to say my Democratic friends watch more SNL than they do the news sometimes.
Well,
so,
it strikes me that one of the reasons
that might be the narrative that works.
Well, one of the reasons you may want to focus on that, if you're determined, as Jordan suggests, as a Democrat to undermine his candidacy, is because it's more provable than that there's no hard facts at this moment about that will resolve the fight between Dr. Ford's version and his version. But there are people who can come forward and talk about the drinking. So maybe that's one of the reasons you seize on it.
I mean, you know, going back to, I think, what we talked about before on the show is that, you know, this happening at this point in time, you really have to tie this to the Me Too movement. And I think that's a large part of, you know, looking at this allegation, what's happening now, because it's already into a movement that's already going. The drinking, that one's a little tougher, right? I think I wouldn't make that my main staple point. But I think, and going back to a point you made earlier, talking about, you know, Democrats, obviously this is political. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And if Senator Schumer and anyone else can step forward and go, we will not confirm, we will not move towards confirming, has little to nothing to do, at least at that point in time, with this. It was all to do with, we're looking at a president that may be facing indictment, who has, you know, members that are already, you know, facing jail time. So the idea that we're going to be against any nominee was the fact of having a president that may be indicted having to nominate a Supreme Court justice. All right. That's what it was, not so much of this Kavanaugh effort.
I got to get back to another pledge break. We'll be back in just a minute and keep talking on Political Rewind. Bradley Drew, it's all yours. We have some breaking news. You know, there's been a lot of questions raised, mostly by Democrats, that the FBI investigation ordered by the White House on Kavanaugh doesn't take in enough territory, doesn't go far enough. They've restricted the list of people to be witnessed. But the New York Times just reported that President Trump says he favors a comprehensive investigation, and he has now authorized FBI to broaden their inquiry dramatically, but they still have to do it by the end of the week. All right, we'll keep track of that. Jim, you wrote a column, let's spend a few minutes on, it really is one county's response to the fact that the state and the federal government are just not delivering the kind of health care that county needs. What county and what's going on?
They're tired of the debate. They're tired of the argument. This is Tolliver County. It's a very poor, one of the poorest, if not the poorest, in Georgia. 1,600 people midway between Atlanta and Augusta, right off I-20. And while a lot of y'all were kind of anticipating the Kavanaugh hearing on Thursday, on Wednesday I drove down there and talked to the Alan Fort, who is the superintendent of the Tolliver school system and also the principal of the only school. It's pre-K through 12.
And he's a real longtime Tolliver County mainstay, right?
No, actually not. No, he's kind of moved around in educational circles across the state.
Okay.
For the last 44 years, he ran for school superintendent, state school superintendent, as a Republican in 2014, I believe. Mm-hmm. And what they've done is they have dedicated a portion of the school budget to a clinic that's going to be on school grounds, but it is going to serve the entire county. And anybody in the county who has a condition or something can go to that school and get treatment. It's a very, very minute little thing, but if you compared it to what Gwinnett County might do, Gwinnett spending the same proportion of taxpayer monies would be building a $73 million hospital.
Wow. You know, Jordan, what's interesting about this story, number one, is it's showing a local community stepping up. We often say that, you know, they're not doing anything in Washington anymore. They're fighting. And in state government, to some extent, we have a gridlock over certain issues. Certainly how you expand health care is one of them. So the creative work maybe is going to be done in local communities like in Tolliver County. I don't know that's an answer to not expanding Medicaid, but it's an interesting starting point.
I really love seeing this, actually. You know, regardless of your feelings on Obamacare, there are skyrocketing premiums, and we're seeing that states are trying to find local solutions, and counties are now finding their own solutions. So I think this is really, really awesome.
So the companion, it wasn't meant as a companion story, Michael, but so Galloway writes his column about how Tolliver County is handling a problem with getting people the kind of health care they need. And 2 days later, the AJC on the front page reports that maternal deaths in Georgia, which 8 years ago ranked worst in the country, according to Amnesty International, not only has it not gotten better in the 8 years since that report, which shocked many state officials, the AJC says it's gotten even worse. And one of the main problems, according to the reporting, is the failure to expand Medicaid.
Yeah, I think I had even heard a statement that really shocked me that said that when it comes to mortality rate and what was this? This quote was, you have a better chance of surviving maternity in Iraq than you do in Georgia right now. And that's an incredible statement just to hear. But, you know, when I was reading the story and I was looking back, it really touches to, I grew up in rural North Carolina, so I'm familiar with rural scenarios. And, you know, the idea of having to go 20, 30 miles to a hospital, to a clinic, you know, having one doctor maybe in the town is something that grips a lot of us. And think that this is right here down I-20, you know, where they're having some of these same issues. And I like the fact that, you know, Fort is someone who said, you know what, let's grab this by the horns and see if we can do something about it. And he's been able to kind of turn in and saying, look, you know, we can create these kind of solutions. And if you can't figure it out under the Gold Dome, if you can't figure it out in D.C., we can do something about it in our own communities.
You know, Heath, for the last week, since Brian Kemp announced that he was going to pay teachers $5,000 a year more, give him a big raise, we've said that could be a big, big issue moving forward. It could be a motivator for voters. I wonder if on the flip side of that, when we hear about things like this, whether Stacey Abrams' plan to expand Medicaid isn't, in fact, an equally powerful motivator.
I would definitely agree that just expanding Medicaid, if it's a simple solution, it sounds great, and is definitely one that, that Stacey's going to run on and try to go to the bank. I think that when we – I want to commend Tolliver County and Sumter County, and, you know, there are dozens and dozens of counties in Georgia. I want to commend Jim for getting out to Tolliver, right, and exposing for most of the readers and for our listeners that there are these counties all over the state of Georgia have somewhere between 1,600 and maybe 10,000 total residents in a county. You know, in Atlanta, you've got more people in a precinct in some places than that. And they are coming up with innovative solutions. We do have to solve health care. Republicans and conservatives are all about that. But we want an experiment like this in 159 counties, because the one-size-fits-all approach of Medicaid expansion isn't going to solve this. Over two-thirds of all physicians in the state of Georgia will not take Medicaid.
Right.
And a lot of them are OBGYNs. So even if you expanded it, you wouldn't have the doctor there to help.
Jim, you're a really smart column about Tolliver launched this part of the discussion. You get the last word.
Okay. I would say you have to remember that the American healthcare system wasn't created. It happened by accident in World War II. Employers began adding healthcare as a benefit to attract workers they couldn't find. And this thing that's going on in Tolliver has that kind of that same impromptu motivation, I think.
All right. We are completely out of time for today's show. Jordan Fuchs, it was great to have you here. Come back. We'd like to have you back on the show sometime. Michael Owens, you know the door's open for you to come in, as it is for you, Heath Garrett and Jim Galloway. Thank goodness you're here with me on Mondays and Fridays. Thank you for another good show.
You're welcome.
All right, we got to get out of the way for our Bradley George and Drew Dawson to tell you a little bit more about how you can support us. We'll be back tomorrow at 2. Have a great afternoon, everybody.